And so it's the week running up to the England-Wales game at Wembley, and it's our 100th episode, and we thought we could do something sort of glitzy and push the boat out, or we thought, well, actually, rather than get a celebrity, we could sort of go for sort of Welsh footballing royalty and get a member of the Barry Horns on. So it's a very, very good pleasure to welcome for the, is it the second time?
Yes, just once yeah, before, right. Yes.
So welcome back for a second time, not only a member of Barry Horns, but a neighbour, given you live in the street behind me, yeah, formerly of, yeah, of Swansea, now of Cardiff, Mr. Chris Leake. How are you, sir?
Very good, thank you, and also very privileged to be on this 100th edition. So delighted with that, thanks for inviting
me. Yeah.
We got this match coming up with England now, and it takes me back to my first ever time I saw Wales play in 1970, well, first time I saw them play live, and it was the first time as well I'd been to Ninian Park. And also that week, also looking forward, like 7 days later, Wales were playing Northern Ireland at the Vetch, and I was seeing my hero of all time, George Best. So what a week to come. Boy, was I excited.
50 years ago, does that feel that long?
It does sometimes, yeah. No, but when I think of some of the incidents in the game, no, it comes back, it feels like yesterday, even getting on the train in Swansea and all the way there and everything. It just feels like yesterday because I've been writing some things down that have, you know, brought the memories back. So it's becoming, I can just see it now, actually. Ninian Park was a picture, by the way. And of course, the biggest crowd I'd ever been to at the Vetch was against Arsenal in 68, which was 36,000, 37,000. And this was about almost 50,000, I think, at Ninian Park that day. So I couldn't believe it. It was an amazing atmosphere. But we play in England. What an atmosphere.
We're 18th of April 1970. Rather than face them at Wembley, where we are this week, of course, as you said, it was at Ninian Park. Mm. I've got the official attendance down here as 40,000. But I mean, I'm not going to fall out over it. It's
a big crowd, and they always play it down, don't they? All the football grounds in the country. Yeah. You've got to add 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 on that. But anyway,
I don't want to claim too much for the tax, man. No. So, I mean, before you go into the memories of the game specifically, I mean, like I said, you said, mm-hmm, you know, now of Cardiff, but a Swansea boy originally. Mm-hmm. Tell me a bit more about yourself.
Yeah. Through work, I recently lived in Bristol, and then my girlfriend and I wanted to come back to Wales, so bought a house in Cardiff because most of my family live in Cardiff. And I can zip back for Bristol with my friends and family in Swansea. So it's really convenient. And my job, of course, I managed to get a job in Cardiff and the Vale College, so it's all going well, really. It's great. Other than the fact that we can't go to any football matches.
Well, yeah, not quite, but at least we're still all above ground, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
So you said it was your first visit to Ninian Park. You said you got on the train. Let's be perfectly honest. I mean, there's a bit of a lid on it of late these days, but, you know, you don't have to scratch too deep beneath the surface, and you don't have to go too far back in time to know that, you know, basically being not just a Swans fan, but someone from Swansea following Wales, certainly in Cardiff, wasn't always a walk in the park.
No, it wasn't pleasant. I was quite shocked because sort of hooliganism, I think, or trouble had just about started. I was 12 years old at this time, and the worst thing for me was I was supposed to go with my friend and his father, because my father couldn't go to this particular game. He gave me my ticket. I had my ticket anyway, and so he wouldn't let the boy go there. So I thought, what am I going to do? And I didn't tell my mother for a day or so. And I thought, I'm going to go on my own. I'm 12, bugger it, I'm going on my own. And I did. And she never found out until years and years and years later. But so I get on this train to Cardiff, you know, all pumped up with my red and white scarves, 2 or 3 dangling from each arm and what have you. Get the train on my own. And then when we got to Cardiff, the atmosphere really built up. There was quite a few Swansea and Cardiff boys on the train, and there was a little bit of argy-bargy, you know, on the way up, but not anything, you know, serious or anything, but, you know, thought, but there was a bit of an atmosphere on the train. But once we got into Cardiff, then it changed a bit there. It was much friendlier and better. And then they were laying on buses. They used to lay on buses to the ground, so the buses were stopped from the station in Ninian Park. It was a bit of a walk. It was great. So getting outside, getting the ground, and I made my way near the front, because I'm quite a small person, and this crowd was massive on the Bob Bank, you know, and there we go. And then thinking, wow, this is fantastic, and we play in England today, and we got a good team, you know. Well, I still think we had a good team anyway. I was really excited, really pumped up and brilliant. And of course the atmosphere, and then before the game starts, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but they used to be England, used to have this mascot, this old guy called Street, I think his name was. And I remember seeing him on the pitch at Wembley after England won the World Cup. He's an old man. He used to dress up in a top hat and red tails with a Union Jack emblazoned all over him. And he used to carry this white big wooden placard with a George Cross on it. But he was parading round the side, you know, on the pitch, the side of the pitch, walking all the way around the ground with this placard. But you can imagine the stick this bloke had from the Welsh fans. There was all sorts of objects being thrown at him, you know, pasties and what have you, and all sorts of, that was hilarious. That was, I thought, this guy must be brave. And that was the days just before fencing came in, you know, so it was a bit crazy.
I mean, of that 40-odd thousand, approximately how many would have been English away fans? Can you remember?
About two or three. I can't quite remember. They weren't as colourful as they are now. They were, you know, flags weren't really the thing much in those days. It was just scarves, you know. I was thinking about this earlier, and I can't recall them being like they're supported now by any means. No. I mean, there was a presence there, but I can't really recall any, you know, a huge crowd of English fans, so...
So this would have been in the home championship, but they of 1970.
Yes.
So season 69-70, and
they're still
only with a couple of months left to go, but they're still world champions at this point. To be fair to them, they don't talk about it much, obviously.
No, of course not. Yeah.
Mexico 1970 would have been only what three months away.
3 months away. Yeah.
I mean, the 60s was a lean decade for Wales.
Yes.
But I mean, fair play. I mean, you think of 66 and you think of, you know, Moore and Charlton and Hurst and all the rest of it.
Yeah, that's right.
They're all still around, aren't they? And I'm looking at this England lineup, and clearly Alf Ramsey, he's still manager. He's put a strong team out. And so this edition of the home championships, I'm assuming, was part and parcel of the preparation for the World Cup,
It was, definitely.
And so of that 66 winning side, we think so. Gordon Banks is still there in goal, so he's a survivor. Defence is a little bit different, except for Moore. So the fullbacks have been changed.
That's right.
You've got Bobby Moore, but Alan Ball is still there. I mean, he was only a nipper in 66, wasn't he? Bobby Charlton's still there. Jeff Hurst and Martin Peters.
And I remember distinctly Alan Mullery and Brian LeBone coming in. They were so new. Brian LeBone played for Everton. He was quite a good, big, tall, you know, lanky defender, typical centre-half sort of thing. But they had a hell of a team out. And we didn't, as usual, being Welsh, especially in that time, I'd never expected Wales to win, you know. But I was always, being an enthusiastic, avid or mental supporter of Wales, I just hoped and prayed. And when we went 1-0 up with Dick Criswicky, in about, run about a few minutes for half-time, 3 or 4 minutes for half-time, I think it was, and... It was incredible. I thought, we're going to beat them. But Francis Lee scored a screamer of 30 minutes from the end to keep it out. So that was the story of that day.
So you've written about Tony Billington for us. And Tony was never really, or very rarely was he ever kind of out and out first choice in goal for Wales. He would rotate and he would sort of share the duties with the likes of Gary Sprake, but at this end of the decade, towards the start of the decade, it would have been, was it Dave Hollins? John Hollins' brother. John Hollins was born in England, but his brother Dave was born in Bang. I think his old man was playing up there at the time. So Tony was never out and out first choice, but he won a handful of caps.
No.
He was at Swans at the time. Can you remember who else was in the lineup for us? I got it in front of me, but I'm wondering if you can remember.
Just a little point on Tony Millington. I think that reason that he wasn't in as much as he should have been but I got a very biased opinion of him, of course. But it's because the Swans were in the fourth and third division. They'd only just got up to the third division. That's the reason I think they were trying to keep it to like relatively top flight players, you know, first division players. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only reason myself. I think he was as good as a keeper as Sprake, if not better. But that's there we are.
And the first action today, in fact, is from Cardiff, where this England team has a double role of staying firm in wind and limb for Mexico and, of course, playing well enough to keep their morale high. It's a strong-looking side, and there's a minor experiment, of course, in the fullback area where Liverpool's Emlyn Hughes is given another chance. Here's Hughes, and he's a fullback who just loves to come forward and attack. England, though, have a good record against Wales, and today it's a Welsh side without Sprake in goal and Wyn Davies in attack, but still closer to their nominated side than for some time. But a lot will still, of course, rest on the undoubted class of some of their players like Mike England of Tottenham, Ron Davies, the striker from Southampton, and skipper Terry Hennessy. The crowd at Blustery Ninian Park is 40,000 strong.
Yeah, going back to the team, we had the likes of Peter Rodriguez, fullback, Rod Thomas, Mike England was a great player, Terry Hennessy, good hard player, Dick Criswicky in midfield, and Alan Durban. I know people remember Alan Durban, he's a really classy player in my view. And we had two of the finest headers of the ball up front, Ron and Wyn Davies, Newcastle and Southampton, respectively. So, and Ronnie Rees, of course, one of my favourite players. He was a really good player, Ronnie Rees. He was a good winger and very tricky. Created a lot of chances for Wales. Never say a lot of goals, but a lot of chances. Yeah, I thought they were great. I worshipped some of these players, and I thought, and they played well, to be honest. I think maybe a draw was a fair result, but they did play well. They really did play well. And I think it set them up then for the Northern Ireland game at the Vetch 7 days later.
I mean, Mike England's probably the standout name, isn't it, in that Wales?
Yeah.
You know, he was...
Yeah.
He was at Spurs by this point.
Yeah.
He was a top centre-half, as you say.
Peter Rodriguez was like, he looked like a mad Mexican. He had a big handlebar moustache. He looked like a real Mexican hard man or something. And I think a lot of players feared him sometimes.
Was he half Portuguese or Portuguese parents?
Yeah, I think something like that.
I mean, the 70s was a great decade for us in the end, the way it panned out. It's still probably 2 or 3 seasons away by this point, isn't it? But you mean players like Rod Thomas, according to what I've got now in front of me now, EU-football.info, Rod Thomas was on, that was his 10th cap. So he goes on to win, a lot. Rodriguez goes on to win a lot of caps.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
You know, Mike England went on to win even more, and that was his 30th cap.
And Mike England turned out to be, I think, one of our best managers ever, to be honest, I think he was a really good manager.
Well, of course, he went out to America, didn't he? He came back and he picked up the accent and the Stetsons and all sorts, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was quite funny. He was a tall bloke as well. Big bloke, my big man.
Hollywell's finest. So, yeah, what do you remember of the goal? I'm sure it's probably on YouTube, but...
we got to get it on YouTube. It was a well-taken goal, just about, I think, just inside the area, as far as I can remember. I think he was put through... And I can't remember who put him through. Of course, when they was building that few second build up, the crowd all sort of moved. It was so incredible. You know what it's like, especially because I wanted to get near the front of the pitch. You know, get the real atmosphere. You could see the arms going up behind the goal first. You know, as it's on its way in. So yeah, it was great. That's what I remember. I may be totally wrong.
Four. And now, Criswicky. And there it is. Criswicky.
That was his only goal for Wales.
Yeah, I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah, I liked it.
He won 8 caps. Only over just a couple of year period. So he got into the side that season.
Yeah.
Richard Lech Krzyzicki.
North Walian, Polish. Mm-hmm. You were saying about all his Polish family coming to support him, play for Wales. And some of them didn't even speak English at all, you know.
Were players of the likes of Moore and Charlton and all those sorts of players, were they... I mean, worshipped is probably too strong a word, but I mean, certainly they'd have been respected by Welsh fans.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it was a different dynamic in those days with England and Wales. It was like as if... Wales were always in the 4th division, and I shouldn't say this, but that was just the 60s, not all the way through, obviously, And England were like in the 1st division. And I think Wales, the other thing is as well, Wales always have a complex when they play England. We never think we're going to win, we're too humble, and they still play like that against England. They did it the last time we played them in the Euros, they just freeze on that pitch. They got an inferiority complex. So... And my grandfather, who was a massive influence on my life of football, was born and bred in Plymouth, but came to Wales when he was 12. So he had mixed loyalties, basically. You know, he used to love the Swans and everything, and if I was watching Wales, he'd support them. But he was English, though, and I remember him dancing on the street when they won the World Cup. They used to live opposite us when we were kids. So, big influence. So I used to see a lot of England on telly because they were always on telly. And my grandfather was like the first one in our family to have a colour telly. So I was up there like a shot when I went in. When I was, you know, 10, 11 or 12, whatever. And those players, I knew them anyway. Bobby Moore, Alan Ball, Francis Lee. Brilliant player, Francis Lee. Bobby Charlton, Gordon Banks, one of the best goalkeepers ever. Other than Neville Sutherland, of course.
And tell me, what about the home championship? Its last edition was played, I think, 84.
That's right, yeah.
That's just a tiny bit before but before my sort of memory and my awareness of football.
Yeah.
Certainly international football. And so we used to play them a lot, and it would alternate, obviously. So the likes of Moore and Banks and Charlton playing at Ninian Park wasn't a rarity.
No, not
but of
all.
Course, let's be perfectly honest. I mean, I've said this previously on the podcast. It's a long time since England. We've got a friendly coming up against them.
Yeah,
it's a long, long time since they have chosen to play us in a fixture.
It is. That's true.
They've either been competitive games, obviously the Euros.
That's right.
We had them in qualifiers with Speed, and then with Hughes. They've played us, I guess, in the odd game where it's been celebrating some centenary of this, that, or the other, I suppose. And in the home championships, they're obviously obligated. So there can't be many times that they've opted to play us, and certainly I can't remember in my lifetime them choosing to play us. So in that respect, there's something kind of interesting about this fixture, and we've said on the podcast that we just put out looking ahead to the game that it's probably the least important of the three games that we've got coming up. But there will be a lot of people, not least in the media, who will kind of go, okay, well, it's England, and they will trot out some of that old sort of stereotypical... Yeah. But tell me, what was the home championship like? I mean, was there a sense of familiarity and a little bit of a sense of going through the motions, or were they these ding-dong kind of Battle of Britain's clashes?
Yeah, a bit of both, really. To us, to me, at that age, they were exciting. We couldn't wait for the home internationals because that's when we got to see our Wales, you know, right? But it would always be the two best games would be Wales against England, then England against Scotland. They were really, you know, rivalry-wise, it was great, really exciting. But although, having said that, we had some classics against Scotland, absolute class, high-scoring games. They were always full of goals. But then on the other side of the coin, then play Northern Ireland, and usually the last game Wales would play, and there'd be nothing on it, perhaps. And that would be a real bore then. But as for the excitement, it was there. And also, don't forget, it was on telly. Every game was on telly. But for us to beat England in the home internationals would be like us, almost like us winning the World Cup. Or at least qualifying for World Cup anyway. it was exciting as far as I was concerned.
And this edition of the tournament was all condensed into basically, you know, a week, give or take, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It didn't take long. So you had the FA Cup final. Then the following Wednesday night would be the European Cup final, which was the proper name for it. And then week after that, the home internationals. That was it. And then it was the end of the season. And then, of course, if there was a World Cup, everything was in line for that. All European championships, all good, all really good.
And in 1970, it was only England of the home nations that made it. So presumably that would have, you know, the fact that they were world champions still and were off to World Cup, would it have added a little bit more spice?
Yeah, definitely. They had a lot of stick. Some of the stick from us fans, it was great.
I'm looking, I mean, Emlyn Hughes winning only his fourth cap in the land of his father.
Yeah.
As well.
Yes, that's right.
His father was it Llanelli, I think? Went up to play rugby league, wasn't
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Tell me about after the game and getting home.
After the game was a nightmare. Became a nightmare because they didn't love the buses going back to the station. I think it was a long walk from Ninian Park. You know, it was a good atmosphere, really. You know, and then of course we had to wait, and some of the Cardiff fans were a bit of banter on the platform. But I didn't see any trouble that day, that particular day. But it was beginning to start then, the early 70s. Definitely, you know, the rivalry was getting, you know, slightly out of hand, and you could tell which way it was going to go because of the other trouble in football. So. Like you said then at the beginning of this story, that it was difficult for a Swansea boy to go into Cardiff. And if you open your mouth, they knew you weren't from Cardiff, that's for sure. You didn't necessarily think you were from Swansea, but that was a suspicion sort of thing. It's quite intimidating. That was a bit tough. And that's why I think my mother wouldn't have let me go. I don't. My father wouldn't have either, thinking about it, on my own anyway. I remember something about 9 o'clock or something like that, you know.
Quite a traditional 3 o'clock kickoff, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the great thing in those days, man. They've now had this crazy time, you know, which is, doesn't help the fans, does it, at all?
I always think back to the podcast we did, it goes a while back now, but we recorded it in the stand up at Penydarren Park.
Oh, yeah.
There was Helby, there was Mark, I can't remember who else. Jamie was there from the Parkview Martyrs fans group they were at the time, Red Flag Martyrs now. And nice. Mark, who also works for the FAW as well, but was very much talking as a Merthyr fan on that one, great, was saying something along the lines of, as a Merthyr fan, it's a 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff.
Yeah,
pretty much every week, you know, home and away tends to alternate. Yeah. And he said he knows what his routine is on a Saturday, and it was something along the lines of, get up, walk down to town, get a copy of the Morning Star, bag of cockles, pre-match pints,
watch the game. That's what it used to be like.
Whereas now...
Oh, God, the routine was fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic, you know. It's just an awful day. I don't know, maybe I sound like an old fart, but be fair, come on, something. Why change the cup final from 3 o'clock to like five-ish? To me, it's criminal. It really is.
We go off to Glasgow to play Scotland 4 days later, get a goalless draw. That's not a bad result, actually. It's two draws. Just looking as well, and it's pretty much, I think, man for man, I think it's exactly the same 11. Dave Bowen was managed.
Yeah.
And then 3 days later, back, so it's a week apart, back then to Swansea, as opposed to Cardiff. We face Northern Ireland. And what's your memories of that? So that's on home turf, home patch for you. So there's no trains, none of that faff.
No, well, the memories of that one, partially, my eldest sister's 3 years older than me, and she loved George Best, you know, she worshipped George Best. So she'd never been to a football match, probably, I don't think she ever went to one since, you know, but she wanted to see George Best in the flesh. So I think there was quite a big crowd. There was a big demand for George Best, obviously. Where we happened to be standing, there was lots of the school friends, they all just screaming all the time, which got on my nerves. But I saw my hero, and he was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And of course, I still wanted Wales to win, so I had the best of both Wales on that day. And Ronnie Rees, one of my favourite players, popped up and scored a goal, and we beat them well. So happy ending to that week. It was a great week, and I had a great time and survived it all. Good atmosphere at the Vets that day as well, you know.
But am I right in thinking that was the sort of fixture they would move around a bit more around Wales, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
There'd have been fixtures in Swansea most seasons, presumably, but you wouldn't necessarily have been guaranteed home international games.
That's right. And the thing is that you would never see George Best. Never. You know, the chances of him playing at the Vetch for Northern Ireland, because like you say, you used to move those games around a lot. And that was another thing. So that was exciting about it as well. We didn't have to go to anywhere else to see him. So that was good.
And he made his debut at Swansea. Yeah. So that was his 22nd cap. And he'd made his debut 6 years before, almost to the day, also at Swansea, in a 3-2 win. So they were the first two, they were the only two times he played at Swansea for his country. He'd have been a big draw.
Exactly, because I was six the first time he played there. I was obviously too young then to even know who he was. So, yeah, I'm glad it worked out that way. Good days, the home internationals. Good days. I thought they were great, you know. Yes, we didn't always deliver. We didn't always see. Lots of times we had the wooden spoon, but there we are.
But for us to go through an edition of it unbeaten, as we did there, didn't happen all that often.
No, it didn't. No, we haven't got a great record in it. No. Yeah, big bonuses, really. And Tony Millington playing for Wales in the days where international keepers wore yellow jerseys. That was the old way they used to do it as well. Distinctive yellow jerseys.
Yes, yeah, so as I said, we went through unbeaten with the goalkeepers in their yellow jerseys, as you say. In those days, 2 points for a win, that sounds quite quaint, doesn't it?
Quaint.
It was basically a three-way tie. I mean, if they'd gone to goal difference, England would have won it because they had a goal difference plus two. Yeah. We'd have probably come second on goals scored. But basically, England, Wales and Scotland all won a single game and drew two. Northern Ireland lost each game.
That's right, it was. It was shared, yes. To us, that's glory, you know. It may not be to English fans, but, you know, to us it was.
I mean, that was pretty much our last claim on it.
Yeah.
We never won it outright after that. In fact, according to my records here, that would have been the first time we'd have had a kind of hands on it, if you like.
Yeah.
Sharing it with England in 51-52. So you're talking almost, what was that, 18, 18 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah. I do like my stats. That Northern Ireland side, so, I mean, presumably, you know, a week apart, we go into a game against, you know, England, who've got six of their World Cup winning side. A week later, we're at home. We're back at home, having travelled up to Scotland.
Yeah.
Facing a Northern Ireland side, which, with all due respect, I'm looking at this lineup for Northern Ireland.
Was Derek Dugan in that side? Because I haven't got the side in front of me.
That's the name I would recognise, but I'm looking at this.
Yeah, Jennings in goal.
No, well, it was Willie McFall in goal.
Oh, I remember him. Yeah,
yeah, so you've run in only a second cap, so maybe the championship is out of their grasp, and so maybe the coaches at Billy Bingham's having a look at his options. But Dave Craig, Sammy Nelson, Liam O'Kane. A lot of Welsh fans aren't going to be familiar with these names. You know, even if they are, you know, a little bit older.
Absolutely not.
Probably the names they would perhaps... Terry Neal, probably one of Arsenal's good players.
Terry Neal, yeah, he played for Arsenal, yeah, I know.
Obviously
yeah.
George Best, as you say. Jimmy Nicholson, possibly.
I remember him. Played for Man United.
There's a couple of players here who were playing in the Irish League. For Cole Rain, you had someone at Dundee. So, you know, a lot of players that were journeymen, with all due respect. What would have been the expectations on Wales then going into that fixture? We've gone from six World Cup winners the week before to a couple of players playing in the Irish League.
Complete expecting to win. Yeah, definitely. I think we would gauge how well we played in the internationals. You know, you've got to beat Northern Ireland, you know. It's just the way it was. In the rankings out on the four of us, I think that's what more or less was right. England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. So we always thought of them as the team that we should. We used to think, well, that's a guaranteed 2 points. And naive, I suppose.
What do you remember of Ronnie Rees's goal?
Not much at all. Sorry to be so blunt. Cutting in from the left. Can't remember a lot about it, honestly. That's something that's annoyed me now for weeks on end. Been thinking about this for ages, but you know.
Because he was a winger, wasn't he?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he was always. Every time he had the ball, it was always a bit of excitement that you know he was going to do something with it or he was going to get it in the box, and he did. He was a very consistent, good player.
And I mean, not from Swansea, but was from that neck of the woods. Born in Estragunlice.
That's right.
Up the valley.
Swansea Valley. Yeah. I really liked him. He was great player.
So tell me, I mean, we talked about like the rivalry between the fans and off the field. To what extent would have there been that Swans players at the Vetch had a real welcome then, and maybe Cardiff players had a hard time, and then vice versa at Ninian?
Yeah, well, it did start around about 1970. My father and I went to the Welsh Cup semi-final game at the Vetch. It was a real heavy, heavy atmosphere there. There was trouble as well. I won't forget that night, and it started more or less there. And I think it shocked a lot of people like my father's age, because, you know, he was used to going to games and standing amongst Cardiff fans, even though they didn't like each other. It hardly ever came to violence, and that's what he referenced. But it did start then, and you could tell it was getting worse then. And then, and of course, we used to play Cardiff a lot in the Welsh Cup, obviously. You know, by the time we got to the final, it was either Cardiff next or Manupo we were going to play, you know, and that's guaranteed. So the rivalry started getting quite bad, and then, of course, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, it got really bad. Late 70s, early 80s, it was horrendous. And, of course, we've had a bit of trouble with the Welsh fans, haven't we? But 75 or 76, isn't it, against Yugoslavia. But what made it difficult, like you say at the beginning, was me travelling to Cardiff was quite difficult. Me, especially the group of friends, you know. All young Swansea fans running around with loud and messing about and being boisterous. And, so it was quite heavy times, really. But it's still exciting, though, mind. Extremely exciting.
And when you're in your formative years like that, it is, isn't it? And it's...
The adrenaline, it is.
Particularly if you're a kid and you're in amongst these adult men in the main, clearly, and you're seeing a different side to people and you're seeing that more primal, more sort of mob behaviour. Yeah. And you know, these are people that usually tell you not to, you know, tell you to mind your language and tell you to you know, all those things, and then they're sort of let off the leash.
It's true.
One of the things I like about Ronnie Rees is how alliterative his full name is. He was Ronald Raymond Rees. I say was, sorry, still is, I believe. Sorry, I shouldn't send him to a premature grave. Yes, Ronald Raymond Rees. From Estragon Lice, he should really, with that name, be from, I'm trying to think of somewhere, from the Rhondda, shouldn't he? Ronald Raymond Rees from the Rhondda. The Vetch, you know, it's a smaller ground than Ninian Park. It was more sort of like mid-20,000s, though, for this game. So it's still a decent crowd, though, isn't it?
Yeah, for the Vetch, it was decent in those times, because don't forget the success were languishing between 3rd and 4th division. So, you know, they weren't commanding big crowds. And people like my father would stop going because he saw you glory 50s days with Ivan Allchurch and John Charles and Mel Charles and people like that. The class they produced in the 50s was absolutely incredible. So he was quite bitter about the fact that there was only like average crowd 12, 15,000 and, you know, they were in the doldrums for years. He just hated it and it put him off. And for donkey's years, he stopped. In fact, he virtually stopped going, you know, in those times, which was a big shame because, you know, but then again, the younger generation came along. I never missed. I used to watch all the reserve games and everything on a wet Tuesday night, you know, something like that. When you're that young, you're that enthusiastic about it. It's just exciting all the time.
One of the novelties I've seen here, just looking at it, is that Northern Ireland made a substitution, which you didn't see too many of those in those days, did you? Because they hadn't long been, what's the word?
Introduced,
yes.
Yeah. No, I can't remember that.
Tony O'Doherty came on for Billy Campbell. Never heard of either of them, but nevertheless.
Obviously, he didn't impact much on the game because we still won.
You didn't see George Best out around, you know, he wasn't on Wine Street after the game then, was he?
No. Wine Street didn't exist then, as it is now. Yeah, he's probably in the clubs down there. He's got to be. I mean, I was only, 12 years old, so one exactly going around the clubs at that age.
I thought you started a bit younger down there, those parts.
Well, you know, you try. Yeah. Sometimes you can get in.
They were your first two Wales games. What's it been like then? I mean, asking an unfair question to sort of generalise in the next 50-odd years, but was it ever up to Wrexham or what?
Never had a chance to go to Wrexham. It was too much on money and stuff like that, especially as a teenager. And what have you. To me, following Wales through thick and thin, it's a great thing. It's been some terrible times. We've had some terrible times, as you know. But it's great, though, to follow them, isn't it? Because we're such a passionate country, and it just brings out passion that I don't know, I can't describe to watching anything else or watching even Swansea. And I'm mad about the Swans, absolutely fanatical about them. But, you know, Wales is a different story. It's class to me. It's like it's my country. And I just get used to go mad when they lost. I used to hate it, you know, tantrums. But that's the excitement of football, isn't it? That's the buzz you get from it. Like a drug, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it was Confucius who said it's a funny old game.
Yeah.
Well, he was one of the great philosophers, I'm sure. Definitely. If it wasn't him. 50 years ago, half a century ago, we're playing them again this Thursday. Yeah. I won't press you for a prediction yet. I will, but I won't do it yet. What's your thoughts?
Big blow losing Aaron Ramsey today. Massive blow. I know Bale's already out, so I think it's going to make it harder. But there again, if he picks quite a young team, maybe they won't have that fear. Maybe they'll relish in the prospect of playing this, you know, fancy England team. And they are fancy, let's be fair. And I also think then if they step up to the plate or if they, you know, they don't have that fear and they just express themselves, we've got a good chance of actually beating them. So, you know, it just depends on how they are in the first 10 minutes because when we played them in the Euros last, the Wales were awful. They just froze. You might be doing it. I know what you thought of that, but that's what I thought they did.
Certainly in the second half, we sort of stopped playing and they just hemmed us in.
We couldn't
get them out of our half. And we did play in ourselves, I think, increasingly during that game. I have a little bit of a theory, is that I think because so many of our players, to be honest, are English-born, you know, born and raised in England, or at the very least, they moved there at a young age to play professionally. I mean, some will come through at the Swans and at Cardiff and Wrexham, obviously, but by and large, they will go through like, you know, Bale did at Southampton and so on and so forth. Their formative years, if you like, certainly the formative footballing years, are very much in an English environment. And I think that does change the dynamic, if you like, in the sense that for us as fans, we want to downplay it. Gaz was saying this on the last pod we did, the look ahead to this triple header. You know, we will try and downplay it. The media will be a little bit sort of cliched about it. But I do think for the players, it does mean something because their entire football education and experience and livelihood and everything else and culture is wrapped up and is very English. And so I think actually we've got to kind of acknowledge that, even if we bristle when there'll be kind of, the reference to things like, Battle of Britain and the old enemy and all that kind of stuff, which as a fan leaves me cold. I do wonder whether for the players it does mean something a little bit more. You alluded to that a bit earlier in reference to the England game that you went to. I don't think we can go through these three maybe unbeaten. If we can, I think that would be a great result.
Oh, no, I don't think that would be wonderful. That'd be amazing.
But I think if we are Shaun of Ramsey, if we are Shaun of Bale, it begins to look like that 70s lineup. It's more of a workmanlike lineup. It's lacking and that guile, because Ramsey's a sort of player that can unlock their defence. Exactly. I mean, quite how much it needs unlocking with someone like Harry Maguire there.
He's untouchable on form.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
I think
he is. He's class, isn't he?
If we're travelling to Ireland off a bit of a drubbing, then I think that's a problem. A respectable defeat, I think, is fine, because actually those two Nations League games, as we've said any number of times now, are, at the end of the day, they are, more important. So go on then, let me press you for a prediction then for the England game.
I'm actually going to say 2-1 Wales.
Oof.
Bold, isn't it? Bold.
It is.
Brave,
it is.
Bold, optimistic, but I'm going to say it.
50 years of watching us play them, and it hasn't.
I'm still acting like a 10-year-old.
You took the words out of my mouth. Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's such a shame that living so close, we've seen so little of one another, other than sort of socially distant catch-up in the park and in the street.
Yeah.
And it's also a shame, of course, as well, that there's no... Well, yes, clearly we're not at the games, but the Barry Horns aren't there. Je ne sais quoi.
Oh, by the way, just before you go, I have to say, I rang my mate Rob Phillips Saturday night from the Radio Wales, smoke phone in after the games, innit? And Kevin Ratcliffe and David Giles were on there, and he said, you must be delighted today, Chris, being a Swansea fan, that's, 2-1 win. And I said, no, I don't get with that, I said, but I'm ringing up because I'm disgusted with their new kit. It's absolutely appalling. Why have they got grey going up on a white kit? And there was a massive long pause on the radio, and then they started laughing.
A man after my own heart with his foibles and obsessions about kits, designs and colours.
Yeah. Good to speak to you anyway.
It's always a pleasure, Chris. And hopefully before too long, it's back to normal. You and the boys are back on the Tower of Power. Do anything, and we can all be back in the stands. But until then, look after yourself and everybody else. Look after themselves. Look after others. Observe the rules. Please observe the rules. The more we observe them now, the more likelihood we have of getting back, isn't it? That's it at the end of the day.
Back in those games.
And enjoy the game. Take it. What, feet up? SVC or Sky or ITV or whatever it is.
SVC, I've got Sky. Yeah, SVC is fine for me. It's great. See you soon. Bye.